Chapter 10. The Last Year. I think it was Master Gerloz's intention that I should be brought to that house often, so I would not become too much attracted to Thecla. In actuality, I permitted Rosh to pocket the money and never went there again. The pain had been too pleasurable, the pleasure too painful, so that I feared that in time my mind would no longer be the thing I knew. Then, too, before Rosh and I had left the house, the white-haired man, catching my eye, had drawn from the bosom of his robe what I had at first thought was an icon, but soon saw to be a golden vial in the shape of a phallus. He had smiled, and because there had been nothing but friendship in his smile, it had frightened me. Some days passed before I could rid my thoughts of Thecla, of certain impressions belonging to the false Thecla, who had initiated me into the anacreontic divergence and fruitions of men and women. Possibly this had an effect opposite to that Master Gerloz intended, but I do not think so. I believe I was never less inclined to love the unfortunate woman than when I carried in my memory the recent impressions of having enjoyed her freely. It was as I saw it more and more clearly for the untruth it was, that I felt myself drawn to redress the fact, and drawn through her, though I was hardly conscious of it at the time, to the world of ancient knowledge and privilege she represented. The books I had carried to her became my university, she my oracle. I am not an educated man. From Master Palaemon I learned little more than to read, write, and cipher, with a few facts concerning the physical world and the requisites of our mystery. If educated men have sometimes thought me, if not their equal, at least one whose company did not shame them, that is owing solely to Thecla, the Thecla I remember, the Thecla who lives in me, and the four books. What we read together, and what we said of it to one another, I shall not tell. To recount the least of it would wear out this brief night. All that winter, while snow whitened the old yard, I came up from the oubliette as if from sleep, and started to see the tracks my feet left behind me, and my shadow on the snow. Thecla was sad that winter, yet she delighted in talking to me of the secrets of the past, of the conjectures formed of higher spheres, and of the arms and histories of heroes millennia dead. Spring came, and with it the purple-striped and white-dotted lilies of the necropolis. I carried them to her, and she said my beard had shot up like them, and I should be bluer of cheek than the run of common men, and the next day begged my pardon for it, saying I was that already. With the warm weather, and, I think, the blossoms I brought, her spirits lifted. When we traced the insignia of old houses, she talked to friends of her own station, and the marriages they had made, good and bad, and how such and such a one had exchanged her future for a ruined stronghold because she had seen it in a dream, and how another who had played at dolls with her when they were children was the mistress now of so many thousands of leagues.
"And there must be a new autarch, and perhaps an autarchia sometime, you know, Severian. Things can go on as they have for a long while, but not forever. I know little of the court, Chatelaine. The less you know, the happier you will be."
She paused, white teeth nibbling her delicately curved lower lip.
"When my mother was in labor, she had the servants carry her to the Vatic fountain, whose virtue is to reveal what is to come. It prophesied I should sit a throne. Thea has always envied me that. Still the Autarch. Yes. It would be better if I didn't say too much. The Autarch is not like other people. No matter how I may talk sometimes, on all of Earth there is no one like him. I know that. Then that is enough for you. Look here.
She held up the brown book.
Here it says, it was the thought of Thalileus the Great that the democracy, that means the people, desired to be ruled by some power superior to itself, and of Irieres the Sage, that the commonality would never permit one differing from themselves to hold high office. Notwithstanding this, each is called the perfect master.
I did not see what she meant and said nothing.
No one really knows what the Autarch will do. That's what it all comes down to. Or Father Anir either. When I first came to court, I was told, as a great secret, that it was Father Anir who really determined the policy of the Commonwealth. When I had been there 2 years, a man, very highly placed, I can't even tell you his name, said it was the Autarch who ruled. Though to those in the House Absolute, it might seem that it was Father Anir. And last year, a woman whose judgment I trust more than any man's confided that it really made no difference, because they were both as unfathomable as the pelagic deeps, and if one decided things while the moon waxed and the other when the wind was in the east, no one could tell the difference anyway. I thought that was wise counsel. Until I realized she was only repeating something I had said to her myself half a year before.
Thekla fell silent, reclining on the narrow bed, her dark hair spread in the pillow. At least, I said, you were right to have confidence in that woman. She had taken her opinions from a trustworthy source. As if she had not heard me, she murmured,
but it's all true, Severian. No one knows what they may do. I might be free tomorrow. It's quite possible. They must know by now that I am here. Don't look at me like that. My friends will speak with Father Anir. Perhaps some may even mention me to the Autarch. You know why I was taken, don't you? Something about your sister. My half-sister Thea is with Vodalus. They say she is his paramour, and I think it extremely likely.
I recalled the beautiful woman at the top of the stairs in the House Azure and said,
I think I saw your half-sister once. It was in the necropolis. There was an exultant with her, who carried a cane sword and was very handsome. He told me he was Vodalus. The woman had a heart-shaped face and a voice that made me think of doves. Was that she?
I suppose so. They want her to betray him to save me. And I know she won't. But when they discover that, why shouldn't they let me go?
I spoke of something else until she laughed and said, you are so intellectual, Severian. When you're made a journeyman, you'll be the most cerebral torturer in history. A frightful thought.
I was under the impression you enjoyed such discussions, Chatelaine.
Only now because I can't get out. Though it may come as a shock to you, when I was free, I seldom devoted time to metaphysics. I went dancing instead, and pursued the peccary with Pardine Limers.
The learning you admire was acquired when I was a girl, and sat with my tutor under the threat of the stick. We need not talk of such things, Chatelaine, if you would rather we not.
She stood and thrust her face into the center of the bouquet I had picked for her. Flowers are better theology than folios, Severian.
Is it beautiful in the necropolis where you got these?
You aren't bringing me the flowers from graves, are you? Cut flowers someone brought?
No, these were planted long ago. They come up every year.
At the slot in the door, Draught said, "Time to go." And I stood up.
Do you think you may see her again, the Chatelaine Thea, my sister?
I don't think so, Chatelaine.
If you should, Severian, will you tell her about me? They may not have been able to communicate with her. There will be no treason in that.
You'll be doing the Autarch's work.
I will, Chatelaine.
I was stepping through the doorway.
She won't betray Vodalus, I know, but there may be some compromise.
Draught closed the door and turned the key. It had not escaped me that Thecla had not asked how her sister and Vodalus had come to be in our ancient, and by such people as themselves, forgotten necropolis. The corridor, with its lines of metal doors and cold sweating walls, seemed dark after the lamp in the cell. Draught began to talk of an expedition he and Rosh had made to a lion pit across Guile. Over the sound of his voice, I heard Thecla calling faintly.
Remind her of the time we sewed Josepha's doll.
The lilies faded, as lilies do, and the dark death roses came into bloom. I cut them and carried them to Thecla, my crescent purple, flecked with scarlet. She smiled and recited.
Here rose the graced, not rose the chaste, reposes. The scent that rises is no scent of roses.
If their odor offends you, Chatelaine,
not at all, it is very sweet.
I was only quoting something my grandmother used to say. The woman was infamous when she was a girl, or so she told me, and all the children chanted that rhyme when she died. Actually, I suspect it is much older and lost in time, like the beginnings of all the good and bad things.
Men are said to desire women, Severian. Why do they despise the women they obtain?
I don't believe all do, Chatelaine.
That beautiful rose gave herself and suffered such mockery for it that I know of it. Though her dreams long ago turned to dust with her smooth flesh. Come here and sit by me.
I did as I was told, and she slipped her hand under the frayed bottom of my shirt and drew it over my head. I protested, but found myself unable to resist.
What are you ashamed of?
You who have no breasts to hide.
I've never seen such white skin coupled with dark hair. Do you think my own skin white?
Very white, Chatelaine.
So do others.
But it is done next to yours.
You must flee the sun when you're a torturer, Severian. You'll burn terribly.
Her hair, which she often let fall free, today was bound about her head in a dark aureole. She had never more closely resembled her half-sister Thea, and I felt such desire for her that I seemed to be spilling my blood upon the floor, growing weaker and fainter with each contraction of my heart.
Why are you pounding on my door?
Her smile told me she knew. I must go.
You'd better put your shirt back on before you leave.
You wouldn't want your friend to see you like that. That night, though I knew it was in vain, I went to the necropolis and spent several watches and wandering among the silent houses of the dead. The next night I returned, and the next. But on the fourth, Rosh took me into the city, and in a drinking den I heard someone who seemed to know say that Vodalus was far to the north, hiding among the frost-pinched forests and raiding Kafilas. Days passed. Thecla was certain now, since she had been held in safety so long, that she would never be put to torment, and had Draught bring her materials for writing and drawing, with which she planned a villa she meant to build on the southern shore of Lake Diaturna,
which is said to be the most remote part of the Commonwealth, as well as the most beautiful. I took parties of apprentices to swim, thinking that to be my duty, though I could never dive in deep water without fear. Then, suddenly as it seemed, the weather was too cold for swimming. One morning there was sparkling frost on the worn flagstones of the old yard, and fresh pork appeared in our plates at dinner, a sure sign that the cold had reached the hills below the city. Master Gerlose and Master Palaemon summoned me. Master Gerlose said, "From several quarters we have had good reports of you, Severian. And now your apprenticeship is nearly served." Nearly whispering, Master Palaemon added, "Your boyhood is behind you, your manhood ahead of you." There was affection in his voice. "Just so," Master Gerlose continued. "The feast of our patroness draws near. I suppose you have given thought to it." I nodded. "Ito will be captain after me." "And you?" I did not understand what was meant. Master Palaemon, seeing that, asked gently, "What will you be, Severian? A torturer? You may leave the guild, you know, if you prefer." I told him firmly, and as though I were slightly shocked by the suggestion, that I had never considered it. It was a lie. I had known, as all the apprentices knew, that one was not firmly and finally a member of the guild until one consented as an adult to the connection. Furthermore, though I loved the guild, I hated it too. Not because of the pain it inflicted on clients who must sometimes have been innocent, and who must often have been punished beyond anything that could be justified by their offenses, but because it seemed to me inefficient and ineffectual, serving a power that was not only ineffectual but remote. I do not know how better to express my feelings about it than by saying that I hated it for starving and humiliating me, and loved it because it was my home. Hated and loved it because it was the exemplar of old things. Because it was weak, and because it seemed indestructible. Naturally, I expressed none of this to Master Palaemon, though I might have if Master Gerlose had not been present. Still, it seemed incredible that my profession of loyalty made in rags could be taken seriously, yet it was. "Whether you have considered leaving us or not," Master Palaemon told me, "it is an option open to you. Many would say that only a fool would serve out the hard years of apprenticeship and refuse to become a journeyman of his guild when his apprenticeship was past, but you may do so if you wish." "Where would I go?" That, though I could not tell them so, was the real reason I was staying. I knew that a vast world lay outside the walls of the citadel, indeed outside the walls of our tower. But I could not imagine that I could ever have any place in it. Faced with a choice between slavery and the emptiness of freedom, I added, "I have been reared in our guild," for fear they would answer my question.
"Yes," Master Gerlose said in his most formal manner. "But you are no torturer yet. You have not put on Phylogen."
Master Palaemon's hand, dry and wrinkled as a mummy's, groped until it found mine. "Among the initiates of religion, it is said, you are an apoct always. The reference is not only to knowledge but to their chrism, whose mark, being invisible, is ineradicable. You know our chrism." I nodded again. "Less even than theirs, can it be washed away? Should you leave now,
Man will only say he was nurtured by the torturers. But when you have been anointed, they will say he is a torturer. You may follow the plow or the drum, but still you will hear, he is a torturer. Do you understand that?
I wish to hear nothing else.
That is well, Master Grelot said, and suddenly they both smiled. Master Palaemon showing his few old crooked teeth, and Master Grelot's his square yellow ones, like the teeth of a dead nag. Then it is time that we explain to you the final secret. I can hear the emphasis his voice gave the words even as I write. For it would be well for you to think upon it before the ceremony. Then he and Master Palaemon expounded to me that secret which lies at the heart of the guild and is the more sacred because no liturgy celebrates it, and it lies naked in the lap of the Pan-Creator. And they swore me never to reveal it, save, as they did, to one about to enter upon the mysteries of the guild. I have since broken that oath, as I have many others.